paranormal experiences don't really work to a timescale, and therefore, we invite you to listen to a dark minisode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another dark minisode, our little midweek treat before we reach our sixth episode of this season on Friday. And can I just say a big thank you to everyone who submitted their experiences for this season. As I've said on a previous show, we've shattered the records for submissions this season, halfway through the season, which to me is unheard of to this point. But, and I do want to make this very clear, do not let that last sentence stop you from submitting your experience. I don't care if your experience is a sentence or 24 pages. I mean what I say when I say what we're trying to do here has evolved. It's evolved from a podcast where we literally want to show people the darker side of the paranormal and that it exists, but we also now want to try and have the biggest archive of this current era's darkest paranormal true tales. So, irrelevant of the length of your experience, please see the link in the show notes or go direct to thedarkparanormal.com and click on Submit My Experience, which is just what today's submitter has done. And today's experience is something I believe we've never touched on. And that is twin telepathy. But I'll say no more than that. Please, it's that time of the week where I request that you try to find 15, 20 minutes to get yourself a nice drink, a break from the daily routine, and sit somewhere quiet, pop your headphones in, and join me as we listen to Frequency Through the Veil. Hi Kev, I've been listening to the show for a good year now, and finally feel like I can submit what technically isn't a ghost story, but I think something you will find interesting. I don't really know how to start this, so I'll just say it plainly, how it happened. My name's Johan. My twin sister was Abigail. My twin sister and I could read each other's minds. Yes, I know how that sounds. Believe me, I've had 30-odd years of watching people's faces when I tell them, and that quick flicker where they decide whether to humour me, or quietly change the subject, or walk away believing I'm mad. So I will tell you up front, I'm not asking you to believe me. I'm not trying to convince you nor the listeners. I'm simply telling you my experience, hand on heart, how it happened. Abigail and I were born 11 minutes apart. She would never let me forget she was first. We grew up in a semi-detached house in the east of London, raised by a mother who was practical to the bone. No time for superstition, no time for the paranormal, no time for nonsense, as she would call it. I've heard you before on other shows mention the fact that maybe skeptical people just have too much going on to have any concerns about the other side. Well, that was definitely my mother. A single mother working two jobs, trying to do her very best to bring up two kids that were not entirely normal, as you'll soon see. Because from as far back as I can remember, maybe 5 years old, maybe younger, both Abby and I just knew things about each other. Not dramatically, no voices, no visions. More like the way you know your arm is there without looking at it. I'd be playing in the garden and I'd know Abby was bored inside watching TV. She'd come outside 30 seconds later. Neither of us thought anything of it because we had no idea it wasn't how everyone operated. We assumed everyone had this. Our mum thought we were performing. Twin theatre, she called it, and she'd laugh and shake her head. Looking back, I now know she believed absolutely none of it when we would mention it to her. Then came the incident with Abby and the slide. Abby was at her friend Chloe's house one morning. I was home, eating cereal. Mum was in the kitchen with me. And I felt this sudden wrongness in my left arm. Not a pain exactly, more like the memory of a pain. Yes, I know how that sounds. And I knew, with complete certainty, that Abigail had hurt herself. I looked at my mum and said, "Mum, Abby's fallen off a slide. She's hurt her arm." She looked at me with a sideways glance, shaking her head, wiping her hands dry. And then the phone rang. It was Chloe's mum. Abby had fallen from their garden slide. Her left arm had been damaged. 999 had been called, and the ambulance has arrived, and the paramedics were treating her in the back garden. Chloe's mother said they reassured her they believe it's a clean break and not a fracture, which is somehow better. Chloe's mother said she'd placed Chloe with a neighbour and she would join Abigail in the ambulance, but wanted to let my mother know, of course, so she could meet them at the hospital. I could hear Chloe's mother's voice as she constantly reassured my mother that Abigail was fine, she was even laughing with the paramedics despite the pain, and that our mother had no reason to go racing through traffic. When the phone call ended, my mum done this weird thing where she kind of placed the phone under her chin as she stared at me. I acted stupid and said, "Who was on the phone, Mum?" She didn't answer. She looked at me for a very long time, and then she said, very quietly, that neither myself nor Abigail was to ever talk about this alleged telepathy ever again in front of her. Ever. And we didn't. There's a strange authority that comes from strong, single female parents. They can instill a fear in their child that I just don't think a male has the capability to do. It's almost like the veterans of a war. You know they've seen it all. You know they could destroy you. And yes, I'm being slightly facetious. Slightly. As we got older, the connection changed in texture, but it didn't leave us. Through our teens, it became less about knowing small daily facts and moved more about distress, like a low-level alarm, a siren in the background of your mind when the other was in genuine trouble. We worked out quickly that when you felt it, you should pick up the phone. And 9 times out of 10, something was genuinely wrong. For example, there was a night I'd clipped a lamppost pulling out of a junction too fast. Now, I was fine, but very shaken. I sat in the car checking myself over. My phone rang. Abby. She'd been watching television and suddenly heard a massive crash in her ears. She asked if I was all right before I'd said a single word. In our 20s, we began playing with it deliberately. One evening, I sat in my flat, repeating the number 9 internally, focusing on Abby somewhere across town. After 10 minutes of thinking, well, it must be clearly some primal response, I receive a text in block capitals. "Are you saying fucking 9 repeatedly? If so, please stop." We laughed about that for weeks. But the most profound ones were never the funny ones, nor the frightening ones. One morning I woke up and I felt this wave of uncomplicated happiness. Distinctly not mine. I had nothing going on. I sat with it quietly, trying to figure it out, until my phone rang. It was Abby, almost crying, telling me she just said yes after her boyfriend had proposed in Paris. I kind of already knew, because I'd felt her joy before she'd even dialed. What comes next is the hardest part of my experience to tell. Okay, guys, I need to talk to you about money. Why? Well, it's high on my agenda at the moment as I'm looking to move not just house, but country. So I have a money goal that I'm really striving to achieve. And let's just say, to say I've got some way to go is an understatement. But I'm trying not to fixate on where my money is now, because so many people are focused on where their money is today. Acorns is the financial wellness app that cares about where your money's going tomorrow. And something I think is wonderful that Acorns have is the Acorns Potential Screen, so you can find out what your money is capable of. You guys know I've worked with Acorns for a while, and the reason I love working with them is because they take away the scare factor from investing. But in reality, investment and investing should mean the same for one person as it does for the next. Acorns is a smart way to give your money a chance to grow. It's easy. You can sign up in minutes and start automatically investing your spare money, even if all you've got spare change. Acorns is an all-in-one. No more finance apps cluttering up your phone. With Acorns, you can invest, save, and give your money a chance to grow in one trusted place. Sign up now and Acorns will boost your new account with a $5 bonus investment. Join the over 14 million all-time customers who've already saved and invested over $27 billion with Acorns.
Paid on client endorsements. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 2 compensation provided. Potential subject to various factors such as customers' accounts, age, and investment settings. Does not include Acorns fees. Results do not predict or represent the performance of any Acorns portfolio. Investment results will vary. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC and SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal.
I was home one evening, reading, and I was hit with such a feeling of extraordinary peace and bliss that I put the book down. This wasn't happiness like it was with Abby's engagement. This was total peace, absolute stillness. I actually thought maybe she's on drugs or something. The kind of quiet you'd imagine you'd feel if everything you'd ever worried about had simply resolved. I assumed Abby was doing something spectacular. That was how it felt, because I was doing nothing that would have produced this sensation. So I sat with it, and I waited for the call. Yes, the phone starts ringing. But it wasn't Abby. It was my mother. Her voice doing something I'd never heard it do before. Wavering in a way I've never heard before. She told me Abby had collapsed at university. An aneurysm. She didn't have a chance. She was dead before she hit the floor. I went through some grief counselling, and I understand what grief counsellors mean when they say that looking for signs is the mind searching for control in a world which is uncontrollable. That my guilt, which I did feel heavily, was a way of making the senseless feel preventable. I understand it intellectually, but the peace, that's what I couldn't get past. Not absence, not pain, not silence, not panic. Peace. And I've wondered ever since whether what I was receiving for the last time was simply Abby being okay. More than okay. I'm not a religious person. I don't usually talk like this. But that's the best and, I think, most accurate description I can give. My drinking started quietly and got loud very quickly. I lost the job I'd held for 6 years. I lost the flat. I lost roughly a year and a half I can only partially account for. And through all of it, I kept reaching for that frequency that me and Abby always had. But I only ever found silence where it used to be. Then, the image started. A bench. Behind it, an ornamental lamppost. Old, cast iron, decorative. The kind that isn't actually in use, it's more decorative. A small grass embankment rising behind it. It arrived sketchily one bad morning without invitation, and I pushed it away. That afternoon it came back. It was back again the next day, this time with more detail. It kept returning with this quiet, patient insistence. and this is the hardest part to explain. It kept focusing on the lamp and the bench. The embankment was almost like it was saying, "You will see me, this will be how you recognize me." I knew from the image the lamp was decorative. It was Victorian era, probably. I knew the bench had some sort of meaning, what I didn't know. As I fought off my addiction to alcohol, my head started to get, well, things started to make me angry very quickly. So I decided to get away from it all. I very quickly jumped on a laptop and searched for a flight anywhere to spend 2 nights in a foreign country. That was my only goal. Somewhere with no history, no associations. And when I looked, the only place available for that night was Paris. Exactly where Abby had said yes to marry her partner. So there goes the no associations. But I booked it anyway. I packed without much thought, including a grief and self-compassion book that someone had left at my mum's house, a kind of thing that I normally would dismiss. Something about that flight, as short as it was, and having nothing else to do, made me actually read it. It was short, it turned out to be direct and unsentimental in a way I didn't expect. I arrived and checked in to my hotel around 8 p.m. It was still light outside. It was warm, and it was a nice evening. I took the book out with me. I had maybe 2 chapters to go, and I was reading whilst I walked, eventually sitting down on the nearest bench without particularly registering where I was, and I finished the book. I sat back for a moment, thinking about the messages it was trying to give, and then noticed across the road there was a coffee stand. So I stood, I went over and ordered, and I turned round to lean against the counter to wait. The barista caught my attention and passed me my coffee, and something was registering but I couldn't figure out what. Then I noticed the bench I was sitting on. I noticed behind it was a little grass embankment. To the left, an ornamental cast iron lamppost, not in use. Decorative. It was the exact scene that had been in my head for months. So precise. I stood there holding a coffee, unable to move. After a while, I placed the coffee back on the counter and I slowly walked back over to the bench. I don't know what I expected. Some part of me expected nothing. It expected that if I looked closely enough, it would dissolve into coincidence and I'd feel foolish, then relieved. Instead, I found letters. Carved into the wood of the bench, fresh, as if done the week before, in English, which made no sense given I was in Paris, were the words, "Stop blaming yourself." Next to that, something which seemed to have been there much longer, a permanent marker pen in black, with what was the anarchist sign, an A. I sat back down and stayed there for a long time. Given the freshness of the carving, once it had been done by whomever, had Abigail, from the other side, realized this was the perfect opportunity to send me to that bench, to let me know I should stop the guilt that I felt, that she was fine. That's how I took it anyway. Now, I'm not telling you this because I have an explanation, I don't, and I've made a kind of private peace with that. What I will say is this, whatever it was that Abby and I shared, I don't think it had a clean ending. And I've come to think maybe that's not such a sad thing. Thank you for listening to my experience, Johan. Well, Johan, in terms of individual stories and experiences, this is next level. And I completely agree with you with your ending sentiments when you say you don't think it's a sad thing that it didn't have a clean ending. Because by all accounts, it would seem it hasn't ended. What a wonderful and beautiful idea that the spirit of Abby has waited that many years through your alcoholism, through the troubles you've went through, to find a spot in the place she said yes to somebody's hand in marriage, for someone else to carve those words next to the letter A. And at that point, apparently has sprung into action to send you that, to give you a message she could not deliver herself. Johan, this has been a tremendous minisode from a personal point of view. I've never covered this topic before, and I want to thank you personally. My deepest condolences for losing your twin. I am not a twin, but twins run in my family. My father was a twin. My sister has twin boys. I'm unsure whether they share this same thing you and Abby did. I doubt it. Or if they did, they don't talk about it. But your email does make me want to go and pressure them. So that's what I'm probably going to do. Now, before I head off, a quick, huge thank you to our Patreon team, without whom this show would not exist. When you become a patron, you're basically a co-producer. Every change that you've seen happen on this show over the 24 seasons has been down to our Patreon team. And that's why I think, in fact, no, that the community over on Patreon is the best out there online. Now, when you become a patron, there are three tiers. Our first tier will remove those pesky ads. Our second tier will remove the ads and also give you early access to the episodes. And our third tier will do the first two and also give you access to two shows just for patrons each and every week. They're at least 30 minutes in length. One is Dark Bites, where we take a look at the shorter experiences sent in, a show which, in its own right, has over 200 hours of a back catalogue for you to sit and binge through. And the second is After Dark, a new video format where I literally press record on a video and I don't edit a single thing. We do it so that you can see my thought process in action as I try and cover the topics that we've talked about recently. And sometimes I think personally, I really enjoyed that. And other times I think, that was terrible. But that's part of the fun. So, if you're into the show and you want to support it, there are two things you can do. You can join us on Patreon, or you can simply leave us a lovely review. That all helps the show. And one big thing as well, a request to ask everyone, which takes everyone less than 5 seconds. Wherever you're listening now, just hit subscribe. It helps the show more than you will ever imagine. But until Friday, I want you all to stay safe and take care. Goodbye.